Yeah, you liked last week's cash flow.
I did, yeah. I'm warming up to Ion more. First of all, I think the show was a breakthrough. It was the first time I felt like, you guys are going someplace with this. You know, I mean, like, in other words, the potential's here for you guys to obviously turn this into a real show. It felt like the first few shows you were finding, let's put it this way, it felt like you were finding your feet, you know? You were asking a lot of off-the-wall questions and not everybody could relate to. But on this show, it felt like you're hooking up with an audience, and that's cool.
Yeah, and it's always the first few shows in an hour, Ion goes, what, it's over? We need 2 hours to get going. You know?
Yeah. That's right.
It just turned out the opening was a good topic. Like, what's a medium? What's a channel? What's a ghost? We sort of laid some definition down. So that show would be like a good introductory show.
Yeah, you know, you laid all that out, and that was great. I felt that I was probably keying in on associations based on things you were saying because I have a greater familiarity than the average person that's going to be listening.
Yeah.
Although I don't know, you know, you may have people out there that have gotten a lot of Ion tapes and are also into it. I don't know who all is in the audience. But, you know, I'm beginning to see a consistency behind what Ion has to say.
Yeah.
That's increasingly making sense to me, and I'm warming up to it. I like it.
Yeah, and he can just go. Did you listen to the occult science show with that black guy Curtis Davis?
No, as a matter of fact, I'm going to download. I don't think I can see that show. I was just looking at it. I don't think I can actually just download.
It's on the timeline. It's on the timeline.
Yeah, I know, but I can't just download the MP3 and then go listen to it on my iPod. I have to actually play it on my computer.
Right.
Which I probably will do sometime in the next few days.
Yeah, because he really roars along on that show.
Oh, cool.
Like even Glow said, whoa, what a show.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And he just was on. He just wanted to. He knew the audience was a shocking audience, a tough audience, skeptical audience. Well, I don't know what they are, Jamaican.
Yeah, but they were an occult audience, so they should be more open than most people.
I think that was it. He had that. He could go open, and also he knew he had very skeptical.
Yeah, these are people who've seen a lot of crap, and
yeah, and they might be Jamaicans, Caribbean people.
Oh yeah,
it's a religion. I post on Five Bodies. Pear Inc. Kamen University is the sponsor.
Uh huh.
It's a particular obscure. I don't know if it's voodoo. It's worships Egypt. It's all about Egypt.
Oh wow! Yeah, they have a hot. I think that's a hot religion, actually.
Yeah, Egyptology.
I mean, I met a woman. This was going back 30 years ago. I met this woman. She was a black woman, and she owned a salon, a beauty parlor on Wilshire Boulevard in Beverly Hills, and she was into all that stuff and. One of her men friends was around who was also deeply into it, and there's a lot of facets and interesting stuff around that whole. You know, I guess on one level it's a myth because it's just what you know language is handed down to us.
Yeah.
But it's you know I mean if you're into like intricate, beautiful, interesting, you know, museum stuff or whatever. I don't know how to say it exactly, but I like, you know, what they're I like, it's cool.
Yeah, the Ion, after the show, I was talking to JW or Ion, maybe it was Ion about it, and Ion said, well, you know, there was a Pear Inc. audience. I go, what's that? And I looked up on the website, and there it was. So Ion knew more about it than me, the
what's
audience.
Pear what?
Perankh, you know, the Ankh. The Ankh is the famous Egyptian symbol.
Oh, yeah.
And it's per Ankh.
Yeah.
Chem and chemistry, Khamen is the original name for Egypt or something. Alchemy comes from Khamen, so they call it the Khameniversity.
Oh.
And that's the sponsor. And then you look up Per Ankh, and it's an actual religion.
Yeah.
Read about it. It comes out of St. Croix, Trinidad, or, you know, St. Croix Islands in the Caribbean.
Right.
St. Croix or Croix.
Right.
But what was neat is Ion noticed it. He picked up on it.
Right.
I didn't even notice it.
That's what the audience was.
Yeah, there was this Per Ankh thing.
Yeah, well, did he notice it through his clairvoyance or because somebody pointed it out and you weren't paying attention?
Yeah, it might have been the commercial at the beginning of the show.
Oh, okay, the sponsor.
Yeah, and then there might have been another factor, but at least he heard the sponsor more clearly than I did.
Yeah. Huh.
But he is, you know, electromagnetic. He nothing. Oh, we're all little filaments that come into his magnetism, and he picks up everything.
Wow.
Oh, it's super ESP. He does it to us all the time.
Yeah.
Like he, what was it today? Oh, yeah, we had a client who wanted emergency reading yesterday. So I said, I'll call JW and see if he's available. So I call him, and he picks up and goes, yes, we've been waiting for this call. I said, you know about this guy? And he says, yeah, I was picking up on it. See, he has pretty strong ESP himself, JW now.
Oh.
And so he said, yeah, we knew we would have to do it, and we'll do it as soon as possible. So then we did it with the guy.
Cool.
But there was, his son came up to JW and recently and said that, and he's contemplating a new girlfriend or something, and he mentioned something about the girlfriend, so JW describes her or something.
Mm-hmm.
and the son says, you know, Dad, that's the thing about this Ion thing, you know, you know everything now. I mean, it's sort of not fair. I can't have any privacy, you
oh,
know.
Yeah.
As a growing kid.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, a kid would be concerned about that. How's he going to establish his separate identity or whatever?
He can't hide things from Dad, you know?
Yeah.
So I said that to JW. He said, well, you know, this could be a problem for the kid and no space to grow a private identity. And he said, well, he's going to have to learn. There are no secrets anyway. So so he says he'll catch it. And the kid's pretty bright already and probably be able to take it.
He's a teen or preteen?
He's 15 or 16.
Uh-huh.
And then there's another one about...
Well, I'd say he's a fortunate kid to be growing up in a conscious environment.
Oh, yeah. It's very very interesting what goes on in that.
That may be your competition growing up there, Bob.
Yeah, someone worthy to take over Dobstown, you know.
Yeah.
Someone of my abilities.
Well, in 500 or 600 years when you decide to retire.
Yeah, I decide to retire and... just check out the eternity. Well, let's see what this eternity thing is all about.
Right.
But Ion's on this whole thing. Ion's agenda is pretty lofty. We shouldn't have to go into the non-physical to experience it.
Mm.
And say, you can keep this body. There's no point in leaving.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a sexy idea. I know that you're working with him on that level, but, you know, you got to cut the rest of us some slack, Bob. We're more poor mortals down here, you know. We're just trying to get a little slack.
Well, you know, hanging with Ion, you get a little slack.
Yeah.
That's the thing, though. You can feel little, but you might be surprised at what you could be.
Yeah. Well, who was talking about thinking big? Were you? Did that come up in the conversation?
Yeah, it was Scott Woods a couple hours ago.
Yeah.
That was another room.
Right.
Many rooms in Dobstown.
Yeah.
Many channels. Yeah.
You know, actually, referring back when you were talking about the word in the White House. There's something about that I'm still a little hung up on, because you almost imply that whatever the fucking president wants to say is going to end up being what's true.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if what he has to say corresponds with anything actually going on in the world. He said it, that makes it so. But, like, for instance, there are certain decisions that the president makes, which unless he makes those decisions, well, they're what follows, the effects that follows are contingent on the decision and the statement. Like, okay, we're going to war. However, most of what the president does is he's making policy about science or education or what have you. He's collecting data and resource from what's actually going on in the scientific community, and then he, you know, pronounces that to the world. But that's not, he didn't create that. He's just reporting, in a sense.
Well, that's, yeah, but he.
So that doesn't mean that whatever he wants to say about science, that's going to be the new paradigm and the new reality, because all he can say is what is already agreed to be true.
Yeah, but then they decide what is true. His advisors, he doesn't do it, but he's the final say about whether there's cold fusion or not.
Well, yeah, he would make the...
He doesn't invent it, but he has to determine whether we need it or not. We got an energy crisis? Nah, we don't have an energy crisis. We're going to get some more oil out of Texas, you know.
Oh, well, that's assuming that you're saying he has it as an option, and he's saying, no, we don't have cold fusion because he's doing tetrad managing and not using that option. I'm coming from the point of view that he really does have to report what the scientific community...
Yeah, it's not... See, you're thinking it's the president is a person. The president is a convergence of all the different institutes and disciplines and business and science. All comes there.
Right.
But they're
established in the stubborn reality of their consensus world. They're not... Nobody is making shit up for convenience sake.
Well, I'm not saying he makes shit. He makes the White House, which is a corporate entity, not just him. He's the mouth that says what the White House, which is made up of all kinds of committees and advisories.
What the White House is collectively saying. It's collective conclusions.
The White House is not Obama. He's the mouth. But the White House is the whole world.
Yeah.
It's all the science and all the intelligence agencies all bickering among themselves.
Yeah, and all that stuff gets filtered down, and then it comes.
Becomes a word.
At the
mic. Becomes a word.
The microphone at the White House.
Yeah. That's, I mean, you think any major crisis always depends on what the White House is going to say.
Yeah.
And in a post-information society, what was interesting is that Katrina happened and there was no White House. That was new, and that would fit into my statement that this decade was post-information.
Well, what do you mean there was no White House? I mean, people were awfully critical of the White House's response, but nobody...
Yeah, no response. That's what everybody was shocked by. There wasn't a really sane response, what people would expect.
Well, probably they were just disorganized and didn't know what to do.
Well, there's a million reasons. We never know why. I mean, because the real estate wanted to be destroyed because the corporate guys who voted for Bush wanted to rebuild New Orleans. You know, there's that level, any level.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the McLuhan say? Plots for all. Any plot will apply. But the basic thing that stood out to everybody was he ain't doing anything. Why? Why isn't he helping these people? Why are he so slow?
Well, I guess, you know, I had a hidden assumption, which was we don't have the money to deal with this. We don't, and we're not prepared for it. In some distant document somewhere, we were aware of the possibility of it happening, but we have so many other pressing things on our...
Yeah, like this is around 2005, 2006 that the government lost all its money.
Yeah.
That was actually technically March 2006.
Yeah.
Is the cutoff line. Had many money since then for the states. The states have been cut off and boycotted.
From federal.
Yeah, and I've got a lot of information on what really went on there from ION.
Mm.
But we ain't talking about it publicly.
Well, one clue that I picked up on tonight that I hadn't gotten real clear on is this, you know, talked about the disappearance of money.
Yeah.
And there's ways in which that I can see that that's true at the most abstract level of what is money. And then, but tonight you said, well, if you ask what money is, that's the wrong question. If you ask what credit is, now you're getting somewhere, and I recognize, oh, I see what you mean. Money disappeared because we don't use money, we use credit. That's the real question.
Yeah, and then the credit had a crisis.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an understanding medium. Money, the chapter on money is called The Poor Man's Credit Card.
Yeah.
So most of the economy after World War II was credit, but the poor man got welfare, got actual paper money. But it really was nothing. It was promises to pay promises. It was basically a version of credit.
Mm-hmm. Well, a version of credit. Yeah, well, I don't know. There's still something.
The poor man.
Ownership is I think, always feels like it's worth more than you know, leasing or renting or whatever. And, you know, having money is, in a sense, is maybe more ownership there than there is in working with credit.
But, you know, people flipped houses, and I don't want to go into it, but the ownership thing really became a problem the last few years.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the Scott thing?
That we did tonight?
Yeah.
It's excellent, Bob.
Yeah.
I love that you were saying that you were describing the twist. Well, first of all, you know, he's asking good questions. You know, he wants to know, well, what evidence is there for, you know, the effects of the media when, if you're merged with them, you can't see them. And you say, well, you know, you look at an inventory of everything that's happening across, you know, the culture, the society, yeah, and then you can analyze that to see what the common pattern is, yeah.
And you'll find that the common pattern is what McLuhan wrote. It's decentralization taking over from centralization. You know, the basic things he always repeated, those mm-hmm. were the common patterns that apply, that actually you would conclude.
Right.
Up to the digital era.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so you were saying the inventory.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, you talked about the twist, and it was the you create your own space.
Yeah,
it resonated to being off the planet, this space people creating their own space outside of the Earth's orbit, and, you know, ignoring your partner and all that. And I remember that, you know, like one of the Werner Erhard's sales pitches for Est was, well, you know, you create your own space. There was something that Erhard was onto, which seemed to resonate to some people who found his. It's not even probably that far. It probably is not that inconsistent with Ion, in that he was saying he was one of the people who was saying, you know, you create your reality. If you don't like what's going on in Vietnam, ask yourself why, because that's the experience you're creating within yourself. But nevertheless, did you ever inquire into Werner Erhard, why he apparently burned out, or what went wrong with his organization, or was he on track? Or
no, I heard different things, because I know, a friend of mine, his brother was a biggie in Werner Erhard's organization. Just a second. So, Cal, the way your hair is now looks exactly like, look in the mirror, looks exactly like V. And in V. So what were you just watching?
Nothing.
Nothing? Okay, good night. You know that show V?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, just that the main alien named Anna looks sometimes like Carolyn.
Hmm.
A little bit distorted, but when Carolyn's hair is matted down, it's short. Okay, so we were saying.
What was his appeal, Werner Erhard, and, you know?
Werner Erhard. So a friend of mine's brother was in the Werner Erhard organization when it became what was called the Forum,
mm-hmm.
and I heard a lot of defensive or explaining alibis for Werner Erhard's behavior, like pro Werner.
Mm-hmm.
But then you saw him on 60 Minutes, and he was accused of child molestation or something, and he can't come to the States. So I actually asked Ion, I came up for some reason, so I asked Ion the other day, where's Werner Erhard? No, he's not in the States, he hasn't come back. I don't know where he was. But his peak was in the late 70s. He got a night in Malta, or he was invited to them by, he and Bucky Fuller. He was doing a little lecture thing with Bucky Fuller just before Fuller died. So that was his peak, and then the 80s changed the world differently, so that kind of stuff wasn't, you know, he limped through the 80s, but he gave it up. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what happened to him, or whether he was, I know he supported Jack Sarfati in 75, but Jack Sarfati, he doesn't wax that enthusiastic about him.
Yeah. Well, he was the, you know, guru of the you create your own space, which seems like it resonates with what Ion's saying.
Yeah, now that's, people were getting the conceptual idea of that from him, but they didn't know the environmental thing. And if you don't know the environmental thing, McLuhan's thing, or what I was saying.
Well, it seems like Ion wouldn't, if it wasn't for you, Ion wouldn't even be ever talking about that, and he's only beginning to talk about it because you're involving him in that discussion.
Yeah, Ion has nothing to say about anything. It depends on the asker.
Oh.
He says my, because remember, non-physical doesn't create anything.
But it doesn't have opinions, or it doesn't see a particular view as being more correct. It wouldn't look at your at the Bob model of the electronic environment and say, "Oh yeah, we definitely agree that model is more correct than what other people are saying."
Yeah, so Ion has no opinions. Ion does not care, and thinks that what people do here is, they're marvelous creators, everybody. And the bad trips, the good trips, they're all amazing creations, and that's what you do here. But it has nothing to do with the non-physical. Now, the non-physical can be used to help you create better or to have more slack within your creating world of contrast. So Ion is offering to be of assistance, but doesn't care because it's eternity from its perspective, and you got forever to catch on.
Uh-huh.
And what was the other thing? You said this. Oh, yeah. So then, because it's getting all that's happening from me and Carolyn, because that's all it can know. No, it knows everything, but that's all it can interact with. And so,
when it can only interact with what you already know or believe to be true.
Well, he accelerates it or develops it beyond what you think, but he gets it. He begins. He doesn't get anything until you bring up something and speak to it.
Mm.
And Ion is they, it's not he, it's a they, it's plural. So they respond to our questions, and the quality of reading depends on the asker.
Right.
And it's like they are very impressed with my questions, and you could step outside and say, well, reality made sure that Ion showed up to Bob, because Bob was the only guy who was going to get all this stuff out of it, because no one else would do anything. Like Ion says, you know, most people, Bob, if they had access to us, they'd talk to us for about half an hour, and that would be enough. They would not go on for 600 hours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't know how to.
Yeah.
Then he goes on about McLuhan was great, but it's a whole different situation, and we think your five-body model is more appropriate than McLuhan stuff now.
Hmm.
So he supports
that. So that's an opinion, isn't it?
It's an opinion, but it's like, we're not going to correct it too much, Bob. We're not going to ignore it. We're going to work with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's useful enough to work with. But he does say, he has proposed we do a session someday on the obsolescence of the five bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Well, we haven't gotten around to that, but it pops up in different ways. And so it's very complex. Ion is so complex because it doesn't care. There's no problem. We can do whatever we want. Hitler's no problem, anybody, nothing, you do. But there is something that could be done better. And there is the thinning of the veil, which is changing matter. So Ion showed up to tell us, hey, things are not going to be exactly the way you are used to it. It's turning upside down everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we're here to help you adjust to that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't care if you'd respond or not.
Mm-hmm.
So... okay, so you're asking me, what was your question again? Go back to it. You're asking me, does Ion support
Aaron? I don't know. We're talking about, does he have an opinion, or does he...
He does. Sometimes Ion says, we don't understand why you people do this. But I take that with a grain of salt, because they don't understand creativity. They don't participate in it. They think it's... Ion sometimes says that we're in a better position than it. It's got bland bliss all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have any contrast. Here we have an interesting contrast. That's why it's saying, you know, stay in the physical, Bob. No point coming back here. better there if you know how to do it there.
Mm-hmm.
You get to create as well as get the effects of the non-physical.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an ongoing process of knowing with ION and understanding it. So it's certainly not, you know, not what people expect from non-physical. I mean, now I'm just beginning to realize, did you see some of my posts on it? This is, quote, ET contact. This is something way, this is like something that we've never had before. Now, what was he said today? We had a little session. I brought us to a point, and then he started talking about the three Jesuses. And he says, that has never been discussed. Never been said, Bob, before. People don't know about it. But now we've got to this point. I didn't bring it up. I didn't know what to
say. Three Jesuses?
There were three Jesuses.
All at the same time?
No, over a 211-year period. Two of them, Jesus 2 and 3 overlapped. You know, the old guy was, the second one was around as an old guy when the third one showed up. First one didn't get crucified. Third one didn't. I think the second one did. The second two got crucified. And they did, we're just developing it. Just a whole new theme that popped out of nowhere.
How could that be true and not part of it, and not part of any written literary or historical records anywhere?
Here's where ION does have.
I mean, ION says what's true is, he says, keep typing, Bob, because he's saying what's true is what we're languaging, and this
it's not true. Just keep doing it. I mean, he really works with my keep typing thing I was saying on cash flow for months. He that's said ironically by ION.
Uh huh. Oh.
But partly true, you know, it's ambiguous. But let me tell you this, what was I going to say? This is what ION gets worked up about. To the degree it's worked up, this is its bee in its bonnet, is our notion of time and history. We are so fucking off with time and history, it is so laughable. And I've done a lot of it and got corrected on a lot of things.
Mm.
That the basic time history, and it's sort of neat, it is the effect of visual space. Our visual space is distorted, experienced so much that ION has an agenda about that. He's here to point that out.
Mm.
And, it's pretty interesting. And so, the historical records are ridiculous.
Mm.
They get written, changed, altered. They're not accurate. The timing's off. I mean, just the printing press happened 100 years before Gutenberg.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened because the Catholic Church had decided to speed up its printing of indulgences. That's how it started. And it was the same time as the Black Plague, which happened 100 years before they say it happened in 1348.
They had the printing press 100 years before Gutenberg developed it publicly?
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. See, we've got books and dates, and it's not accurate. And it's like what I have to do with ION. I cannot mention dates. I say, okay, did the third Jesus, was he around the same time as Herod? And they go, yes. Was the second Jesus around the same time as Herod? Not so much. He didn't know about him, but he was, the second Jesus would probably died during Herod's reign. But that's, you have to juxtapose, like Moses fucking created a lot of the pyramids. Now, how do you time that?
How did he do that with his
Moses?
I think he had custody of the ark, right?
No, that's Noah.
Oh, no, the Ark of the Covenant.
Oh yeah, no, that comes later. But the
how did he do the pyramids?
Moses grew up in Egypt.
What? How did he do the pyramids, though? They were not done by manual labor.
Yeah, the pyramids were done by manual labor with the extra stuff. I don't know. We've got different facts on that. So far, I haven't got all the details. But I think they may have been made in the future. That's another factor.
You know, one of the interesting things that Harriman points out after he points out all the other incomprehensible obstacles to building those pyramids, like how far away the stones were quarried, and they had to float them down the fucking river, and the size of them, and the whole. And then he was looking at some astronomical shit about one of the pyramids in Mexico, which was one of the first ones he saw, and came to discover that there's an alignment with the capstone that is dead on center with the base of the pyramid, and the base of the pyramid is like 20 fucking acres, and you could drop a plumb bob straight down the cap of the pyramid and it would hit dead center. That means every fucking stone had to be replaced with so much fucking precision, it's incomprehensible. You can't fucking adjust that shit after it's all set up. And there are other astronomical alignments with that thing that are so fucking precise, it's incomprehensible. And those were not built by manual labor.
Well, manual labor was part of it. It's not this late. Now, I've got a lot on Egypt. We've got a lot, and we were just doing the capstone the other day. But first of all, begin with this. Atlantis has not happened yet. Okay? Atlantis
well,
is in the future.
That's just a matter of jumbling up your perspective of the past and the future.
Well, that's true. That from Ion's point of view, Atlantis has always been, always will be. From our time perspective, as we perceive time, Atlantis hasn't happened yet. And the pharaohs were pretty Illuminati guys, and the making of the pyramids is way different than what people think. But here's the point, is that the Jewish slaves, they built the pyramids. And Moses was a baby found in the bulrushes and raised in the pharaoh's family or something. He was Jewish, but he was raised, and he became the head of the Jews. He was the top pyramid engineer. And I have to get a little more detail on this, because I started talking about this with Ion in the beginning, and I didn't know some things. Then I learned some other things later, and then I have to redo Moses. So some of the stuff I have is old and early and not totally new. But Moses may have been a person from the future. Now, here's what's interesting.
Well, last time we talked, you said one fucking third of the people on our planet are from the future.
From the parallel world.
From a parallel world.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, there's one third of our population. Here's a point that Ion makes. It says, how come no one's been able to fucking remake the pyramids with all our amazing science? How come we can't do what that primitive society supposedly did? You know what I mean? Why can't we do
it? We don't, because our physics doesn't allow for us to puncture through to anti-gravity. It's not consistent with what is believed about how to solve Einstein's unified field theory and grand unified field theory, which I believe Haramein has conceptually done. And makes sense, and you can see how you can derive anti-gravity from that model. And that they knew, they had, obviously, that fucking Ark of the Covenant, that thing was some kind of a black hole that was technologically made, and it had, and the brilliance that you were seeing was coming from the event horizon, but there was some kind of weird dynamics there where they were able to create black hole fusion or something, at the...
Okay, we've done a lot of the Ark of the Covenant. And the Ark of the Covenant was a box with the bones of Joseph, and then the bones of Moses, and maybe the tablets. That's all it was. But how it became powerful is amazing. Now listen to this. I'm telling you what Ion said. You don't have to believe it. It was an amazing story of how the power it came. And the veil... the thickening of the veil was caused by the attention on the Ark of the Covenant. And now we're witnessing the unraveling of that. So I bring up these things that you're talking about with Ion, and Ion corrects them.
Yeah.
It's pretty...
Well, the Ark of the Covenant, when it was in Solomon's temple, was in... inside of an enclosure, which was inside of an enclosure, which was inside of an enclosure, which was inside of an enclosure, because this radiation from this thing was so powerful that if you got too close from it, it would fucking burn you up.
Okay, there were three Solomon's temples. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I had some of this information from the Evergreens and from what you're talking about. I'm aware of that stuff. So as I started to talk to Ion about Solomon's Temple, it turns out it's so different from what we think it is. And if you believe Ion, and the historical record's all fucked up, it's all distorted, it's all nuts, And that's what we're rewriting the history of all this stuff in our books. Now, you don't have to believe it, but this is what Ayn has to say, and Ayn's going to be around a long time to fucking defend its point.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Like, here's an interesting point about Haramine. Haramine and those guys come out of Elizabeth Rocher. And this is Dan Winter. Who's Elizabeth Rocher? She was the one who had the physics and consciousness seminar in 75 that Jack Sarfati attended. And that was the beginning of this wacky kind of physics, or superluminal physics. And Jack Sarfati writes about Elizabeth Rocher. She now works with Haramine, Nassim Haramine.
That's right. I saw a video clip of her.
Right. And Dan Winter came out of that same nexus. These same people are working on coming out of the same themes that Sarfati and Rocher were part of 30 years ago. And so you have this circle of people talking back and forth within their terms. I bring this stuff up with Ion. Man, does he slice through it, talking technically. And I'm still doing it with Dan Winter. I'll quote directly from Dan Winter, and then Ion goes into it. And we touched a bit on it, right? Listen to the Occult Science Radio. Because Curtis had interviewed Dan Winter, we go into Dan Winter a little bit, and Ion talks about it. But didn't he mention it didn't we do it again on Wednesday?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. So it's on the Occult Science thing. He covers a lot of topics in the Occult Science show. I think you'll like that. But it's pretty weird and interesting what's actually going on. And one of the main things, so I've been trying to say this lately, I think I said it to you before, if you had an ET show up in your living room and he consented to hang around with you for a while, you could ask him all kinds of things, and he'd tell you that, right? Mm-hmm. And then he'd amaze you with his ESP on you and whatever. Well, that's what it's like with fucking Ion, so basically I got a fucking ET here because he's not a spirit. That's what's really interesting. He said, he rubbed it in last week, JW is not a medium. He has allowed non-physical come through, and it's the first time this will ever be have witnessed in public.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened privately through the incredible history that the world's had, different scenarios, but never this long, this much interaction, and in being presented in public. So this is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, I finally got it on the last.
The energy of it.
Well, on the last cash flow show, I finally got it that he. Because I know you told me he walks around, but it didn't occur to me. He's got his fucking eyes open, and he's looking at stuff like JW's just doing his normal stuff and doing this at the same time.
That's right. We do.
I mean, even Lazarus is getting the hang of using the body, but I don't know that he ever got to where he could just, you know, walk around eyes open. Although Ramtha did that, but Ramtha was a complete fake.
Yeah, it was, and Ion agrees, and so do the Evergreens.
Yeah.
But I think the Evergreens said the first couple of minutes of Ramtha was real, but then she exaggerated, you know, conceptualized into an Atlantis warrior and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But what you just said, sometimes we'll watch JW on Skype, and I'll watch him, it's close up, and I say, okay, and I put him in a trance, or, you know, Ion comes in, and his eyes slightly glaze over.
Uh-huh.
And he's sitting there, we're sort of looking back, we're sitting in a chair, and he's gesticulating, you know, really extra.
Uh-huh.
It's JW, but extra JW.
Wow.
You know? It's obviously a change. And yet it's this body there, you know?
Right.
Talking and just going on and on. And, of course, with the Skype, there's
Well, if he's doing stuff like in the kitchen,
making cakes.
Yeah, but is that Ion doing that, or is that JW doing that while juggling Ion?
JW is, his wife likes to have Ion make a cake.
Oh, so JW isn't in his body.
Oh, he's in his body. Okay, he's his body, and you know the body is making the cake.
Uh-huh.
But the body is possessed by Ion, or non-physical is emitting through it, and it makes JW's hands go better on making the cake.
Oh, okay. So it supercharges the creator.
Yeah, he's supercharged. That's a good way to say it. And that's what Ion wants us to do. He's here to supercharge us.
Yeah.
When you have to allow, it's really new to have this trinity. You've got your physical, non-physical, and the labyrinth of your mind, the rules of your mind. And the mind has rules, and you cannot ever change those rules. you can adopt new rules, but it'll always shift and affect the old rules. And that's one of the best ways to interpret the why people have minds.
You mean you can't just disappear the old rules. You have to remodel them by bringing in new rules.
Yeah. He was describing this the other day, that you do not get rid of the old rules. You cannot. But you can somehow bring in new rules or modify them or make them parallel. I'm not clear on that. There's probably good stuff, you know, on one of the readings about it. But I do so much with them, I can't remember half of it. When I'm reviewing it, that's when I make my discoveries. It's fucking, like, I'm only up, we've done 200, we did 207 tonight, session 207, but I'm just reviewing 31.
Yeah.
And 3 hours each, for fuck's sake.
Right.
But incredible stuff, and then you see the embedding. It's just like a Zappa situation. Little riffs are in early albums, and then they're developed in later albums. That's what he's doing. He's dropping stuff in all the time.
Right.
This Ion knows totally what it's doing. This, you know, if you look at that fringe, I was telling you, remember I told you the fringe where the bald-headed observer is talking to Peter in the woods, and he's saying to Peter what Peter's going to say as soon as Peter says it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's like with Ion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a being stretching over the whole. As a matter of fact, one night I was out looking on, we were having a reading, and he said, go out in the veranda, night, you know, beautiful Hawaiian night, but it was kind of weather you could see the clouds, maybe it was a full moon or something, and he says, look up at the clouds. So I looked up, and I was just looking at it, and then pretty quickly this huge face was in the clouds, you know, big stretch of clouds. And I said, is that you? And I said, yep, that's a projection by you, of me, through you, you know, something like that, you know what I mean? But there was this incredible huge face in the sky.
Yeah.
It was pretty neat.
That is cool.
What?
That's cool.
Yeah, we have all kinds of neat things with it. That's what's so much fun. And Ion said after the last week's Kurt Davis, the Cult Radio Show, Ion the next day said, well, Bob, you were really digging that one because you knew we were on full cylinders and you knew that you were going, see, people, this is what I'm talking about. Can you fucking get this? Do you realize what you're listening to?
Yeah.
And I was thinking that during the reading. I said, man, is he roaring today?
Yeah.
And so
Has the show got feedback?
No, I never heard. Well, the guy said he would call James the next day. He didn't, you know, but he'll probably have us back. I don't know if James is going to call and bug him right away, but he was impressed, as you'll hear it, and claimed he said, I'm calling you tomorrow, James. Well, he said that sort of like that the last time
we were on. The first one, yeah. He's like, I hate to break this off right now. We want to get to the next one as fast as possible.
Yeah, well, he never called back, and then James eventually called him, I think. Initiated, and then we got back on with Ion. But, you know, these guys are nuts. I don't know. They don't mean what they say.
Well, I think they do in the moment, and then there's so many other things impinging on their life that it quickly becomes a memory, and they forget what they were enthusiastic about.
Yeah. But Ion knew what I was thinking, you know, told me the next day.
I could have told you that. I know that's what you're thinking a lot of the time. You're like, people, can you believe what you're hearing?
That's right. I mean,
now here's where you cheated again on the cash flow show, which is that somebody called in and said they had a criticism, and you asked Ion, where are you, and he said outside of Flagstaff, and then
Sedona,
and then you say, and then he writes back and he says, you're wrong, asshole, and then you say to Ion, well, is he in Arizona? And Ion says yes, and then you go, well, see, you're wrong, asshole, but you projected that onto him. We don't know where the hell he was calling from.
No, here it is. You missed some of it. He said, the guy wrote, Joseph was his name, and Ion still talks about Joseph. He talked about it today.
Uh-huh.
He loves Joseph, but Joseph said, yes, you could say I'm outside Sedona, but how far? You know, I could be, Africa is outside Sedona.
Right.
So he objected to the imprecision, and he implied it could.
Well, he could have been in Africa. You don't know you don't know where he was calling
from.
Yeah,
but do you remember what Ion said? Ion said, well, if we gave you your cell phone number.
Yeah, well, that's all true. But nevertheless.
No, wait a minute. That's not necessarily true. Look, I just said, he said, Ian said, if we gave you your house address and your cell phone number.
And your IP address.
Yeah, you would think we're surveilling you. And that's smart. We're dealing with a lot of jerks out there. You do something, they can say, oh, this fucking guy is spying on me and cause a hassle.
Yeah.
I agree with Ian on that. He said, we could do that, but you'd make a big issue out of it, and we have the cops on our doorstep or the Homeland Security. So he said, I just kept it as outside Sedona. I said, well, are you talking about Africa? How far out, Ian? He said, no, it's Arizona. He's in Arizona. And that was that.
Then you took that to be true without verification or validation.
Well, that's because I know what he can do, but I don't know if it's true. But I said I just encourage people to realize that Ian is being smart by not saying the cell phone number. But most people say, it's bullshit. You didn't prove it. No, we didn't prove anything. I don't think we'll ever prove anything. Well, we'll prove some things, but it's all subjective and relative of what you prove, because Ion's really good on human nature.
Yeah.
And how it changes every day, and how it will purposely.
Well, I know he said if we give you a prediction of something that's about to happen, you'll fucking change it before it happens just to prove us wrong.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, then Brandon called in and said, "Okay, where am I?" And Brandon's a fan of the show.
He said close enough, but we don't know what that means either.
Yeah, he said. Ian said you're in the Old South, and. Brent said, yeah, that's close enough, so I don't know, you know, it wasn't way off, I don't know what. But here's the thing, Ion's told me a lot of stuff, and he gets upset about what I used to say before Ian came on about what we knew. He said, Bob, if you start being right too many times, we're in big fucking trouble.
Yeah, I believe
and
that.
And you're a fucking terrorist. If that means you're spying on all these things,
right.
You know. So,
yeah.
We don't care. We don't care, how accurate. I don't care how accurate we are. And
right.
The Everings were like that, too. So I don't care what anybody thinks about this. But after a while, you keep listening. You have to listen. This fucking mind can take any topic and give you details on it. You don't know if it's right or not, but he can fucking talk about it.
Yeah.
Reasonably accurate. And then tell you what's going to happen next in the field. And then jump to another topic. You have to realize the speed we go.
Well, he is a monster.
Yeah.
You said that a while back, and now I'm agreeing with you.
When you hear the occult radio show, man, 2 hours of monsterdom.
Wow.
And he told some incredible stuff that was, he told, what's his name, Kurt. Like, Kurt had he has a business. He says, well, what do I do? How do I not pay taxes? Blah, blah, blah. And then fucking Ian went into something called the TIN number, blew everybody away, told them how they call up the government and get this TIN number. Blah, blah, blah. After the show, JW, who knows a lot about finance, said, you know, I've never heard of this TIN number. I don't know what the hell Ian's talking about.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. Ian may have looked up and found out it didn't exist. But it's pretty incredible, the range of topics on Kurt's show.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't stop. You go from one thing to the next. Yeah, it's a monster. So, I think this is it's a UFO. It's an unidentified flying entity or something.
Well, it's not fair to call it that, except to sensationalize it.
Yeah, it's to point out people, look, whatever you imagine you can get from an ET showing up, you're getting pretty close to that with Ion. So Ion's in the same category.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's going to happen next. Ian said, I think we'll up the ante, Bob.
Oh.
What is going to fucking do now?
Mm-hmm.
He'll probably say, Scott, in Portland, take that banana out of your mouth right in the middle of the show. And you'll be eating a banana. The fucking thing will say, hey, get that banana out of your show.
I don't know. I might freak out and call the cops, Bob.
Yeah. Hey, Ian's juggling. We got tetra measure. Ian's going to be real careful. This is like an ongoing press conference, you know. And that's why I watched a lot of looking at V. This show V is about that. The aliens arrive, you know, and then they're trying to set up proper communications with the planet and not freak the humans out and their reptiles underneath.
Right. Well, that's the theme from that guy that Jerry promotes. He goes to his film festival. in San Francisco, and the guy did the...
Oh, Craig Baldwin.
Craig Baldwin. Craig Baldwin was the early bird on that worm, because when he did Tribulations, he was pointing all that stuff out in comic book form, and everybody, of course, thought he was tongue-in-cheek, and maybe it was, but it turned into a real meme.
And then when Jerry showed it to me in 93... he brought it to our home in 91, and I said, that's all from Cosmic Awareness.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, and Jerry didn't know that, and so he told Craig, and Craig was ambivalent about it. Is that right? He wouldn't cop to it, but he was amazed at, Jerry was amazed at how I could pinpoint every theme in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was Cosmic Awareness. You go back to the early 80s region.
Cosmic Awareness was into, like, the rodent.
Paul Shockley.
He was the bad
Cosmic Awareness.
They were promoting memes about dragon people and stuff
like that.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. That's where I first read all that stuff in 79, 80, 81.
Mm.
They were talking about Dulce, New Mexico, and the Greys, and the reptilians, and all that stuff.
How did Worcester respond to that?
Oh, he thought it was ridiculous, and it was ridiculous.
Well, then, how could they even call themselves Cosmic Awareness anymore?
Well, they weren't. That's what comes out in that interview. That's not Cosmic Awareness from Worcester's point of view.
Oh.
And, you know, Ion agrees. That's what's interesting. Ion agrees. Red of the Blue. Well, I mentioned Cosmic Awareness occasionally, but all the Blue Ion said, you know, Dave Worcester was the only one who kept his head cool in that environment.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he compliments work.
Yeah, and even he got hurt.
Yeah.
You know, physically.
But he, you know, he did okay. He survived it. He's not dead. Paul Shockley and the rest of them are dead.
Yeah.
But the, you know, like, what I like about Ion is that he says things like that, and I know it's kind of real, because I respect Worcester more than Shockley sort of thing.
Yeah, I know you do.
And Dave's a better talker, and so I like that. And then Ion... agrees with that.
Mm-hmm.
We've got
Dave's heart is in the right place.
What?
You know, Dave's heart is in there. He kept his heart, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
True.
And that's what Ion says.
Yeah.
So Dave knows. Dave knows.
Oh, hey, have you introduced Dave to this yet?
No, not yet.
I haven't even told him about it, huh?
No, because... Because
there'll be professional jealousy, and he'll try to put you in your place and make sure you understand that.
But I'll begin by saying, hey, I found a source that likes you, Dave. That.
Yeah. Because he never even really grabbed onto the Evergreens, did he?
No. Yeah, Ion's done a lot on Michael Blake Reed, which is pretty interesting.
Mm. Stuff that Michael Blake Reed would be surprised that you knew about.
Yeah.
Well, how come some people are destined to do this? Is it, you know, on the show he said that some people are born with spiritual gifts.
Everybody is. It's just that there's different kinds, and we're not experts on finding out what we are. Here's the amazing thing in history is that everybody, all through history, the empires and everything, use mediums. That's the big secret, and that's why for the average people, they've always been told, don't go into a mediumship, that's taboo, that's demon stuff. That was the con.
Yeah.
Keep people away from it, and we'll use it. You people can't, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm becoming increasingly aware of that, you know, as I hear random shows on Coast to Coast about what was going on in the occult in the early 20th century, the 19th century, the 18th century, it's always been there.
And Ion was doing the whole thing on Hitler's medium. He had a medium in 23, 24, 25, and then Goebbels and Goering and them started to, and this is when he was in jail, you know, they don't really get going until 1930. They attempted the putsch in Munich in 1923, he got caught and put in jail. So he has a medium there, and Goebbels and Goering say, this Jew boy is too right all the time, and they murdered him. Murdered Hitler's Goering.
Oh, they murdered his
personal medium.
Oh,
because he was too right all the time.
What were their posts within Nazi Germany? Goering and...
Oh, Goering was the head of propaganda. Goebbels was ran the Gestapo or the SS. They were the top guys.
Yeah.
The top guys killed...
They were his top military aides, and they double-crossed him by killing his medium.
Yeah, but that's...
Well, now, wouldn't they want a medium that was right on? Because that would help with their cause.
Ah, but the medium would know too much about their shenanigans.
That eventually...
Their secrets.
And he would, he would tell Hitler, and then Hitler would have to kill them.
Something like that, you know.
Yeah.
And so he was Jewish, so they called him a Jew boy. They were going to kill that Jew boy. So they killed him, but then they all, in the 30s, they used 11 mediums. The main one was Rachel. I've got a whole history on that. And that was why the Nazis got way ahead on technology.
Well, what does that say about mediumship when the force for good in the cosmos, the ion non-physical, is aiding and abetting the inhumane monsters?
It's not non-physical. It's mediumship.
So they were dealing with a spirit, not non-physical.
Yeah, and though they were very conflicted, these mediums, but they were forced to. Because they were, Nazis would kill them if they didn't do it.
Yeah, well, who are these spirits that have an invested, malevolent interest in creating destruction?
No, I don't know. Well, they didn't. I don't know if they knew what was going to happen. They just gave all kinds of great information, and all this stuff is in Gravity's Rainbow. Gravity's Rainbow is real.
Oh.
People think it's just crazy, pinching imagination.
Yeah.
No, it was a manuscript by a guy who... lived in the Reich and met Pynchon at Boeing in Seattle, that area, early 60s, and gave him the manuscript, knew he was a good writer. And Ion said, there are two books that are really not written by Pynchon. And one of them is Gravity's Rainbow, and I said, well, would the other one be Against the Day, which is about the period just before Gravity's Rainbow? And he goes, yes.
Mm.
And I said, well, that's true. The other books, people say, well, that Pynchon disappoints us. It's different.
Mm.
I mean, Pynchon wrote... He did something with Gravity's Rainbow, probably embellished it, but the basic information came from this guy.
Well, maybe that's why...
When the book came out in 73, he was murdered.
Who was murdered?
The guy who gave the manuscript of what went on in Nazi Germany to Pynchon.
That was a little too late. I mean, a little too little too late, right? Because it got published.
Well, that's why he was murdered, because it got published. It won the big awards that year.
And they felt double-crossed or something.
Yeah, because the book came out in 73, and he was murdered in 73.
Oh, wow. Well, and maybe that explains why Pynchon maintained a non-identity as an author.
That's
because
right.
He didn't feel that he really, the person, should be taking credit for what he did. So it became, you know, his image became a mystique.
I think it was more protect himself.
Oh.
He was paranoid.
So, you're creating an image that was slightly disconnected from where he really was living.
Who's creating an image?
Well, Pynchon. I mean, how would that keep him from getting killed?
I don't know, but that's why he wouldn't be too keen on being out in the public too much.
Yeah.
And that's also the factor, he got the information from someone else and all that, you know.
Well, Tim Leary was on the ball because that was his Bible when he was in prison.
Yeah.
But he didn't get to Finnegan's Wake.
No, and I don't think I don't know what he thought of Gravity's Rainbow, why he liked it. But he wrote a couple sentences on it, but they don't tell much. But I don't know if he realized that it was real.
Mm. Wonder if you're part of, like, you know, I mean, this is sounds megalomaniac, but if you weren't here, Bob, there would be nobody to elucidate McLuhan's...
all this stuff.
And so McLuhan probably owes you a debt of gratitude. Did McLuhan know who the fuck you were when you guys knew each other?
Yeah, he figured it out.
He knew that you were going to be carrying on the mantle for what his work?
No, well, he knew I helped make him famous. He knew I was Secret Counsel 10. He didn't fully understand it, and I couldn't tell him back then. But he knew I was an intelligence agent. And you look at the quotes in the diary entries I have there. It's right there.
Well, did he have special regard for you for that reason?
No, he never thought, he did not know I would carry on his work.
Uh-huh.
That he didn't know that. He just found it interesting what I would bring up and make him talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would bring up stuff that he would think about, but no one around was interested.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd bring up interesting information for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he would give students assignments to do particular research projects, you know.
Yeah, he gave me one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was the last time I saw him.
But you were not officially, were you officially a student?
No, I was nothing. I was an intelligent person.
But you would hang out in the classrooms.
I wasn't allowed in the classrooms. I went to the Monday night public seminars.
Oh, okay.
And anybody could go to those, and
yeah.
I went to those. And then I would go by the center every now and then and talk to him after hours.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd walk around the area. And
he couldn't see, even back then, that you understood him better than anybody.
No, I didn't let on how much I understood him. See, he didn't know that we understood all this stuff in the Secret Council 10. We knew the meeting was the message. That's why I originally went to nail him in 54, because he was writing about stuff that people shouldn't know. At least my boss thought they shouldn't know that.
Well, nobody could comprehend it anyway, so
yeah,
it didn't matter.
Nobody could comprehend it. What McClune was just impressed that I could bring in information that he wouldn't get from other people, and it would be used in the context of what he would talk about. So I was a good receptive person he'd bounce off of, just like Barry Nevitt was.
Mm-hmm.
I was a co-writer on that level, though we never wrote anything. I was equal to Barry Nevitt and Ted Carpenter and Wilford Watson, the people he worked with.
But they all got credits of some kind.
Yeah, no, I never
referred to you.
Well, I never encouraged it and didn't present myself. He would talk to me like he would then, but he wasn't making a book with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way he talked with other people that he wrote books with, I'm saying that level of intensity I experienced with him.
Yeah.
I could bring him because I brought in intelligence information that he could think about and then come up with some patterns.
Yeah.
But he never, since he knew I was kind of spying on him and monitoring him, he never thought that I would support him. He did know that I helped him become famous in 64 with getting the Tom Wolfe articles. But
mm-hmm. How did you do that?
Well, I got Clay Felker, who ran the International Herald, what was it called? The Herald Tribune, New York Herald Tribune. They started a weekend magazine, and he wanted to know, well, what do we feature? And I said, well, why not fucking popularize intellectuals? You know, make a star every 6 months, bring out a new mind. And I said, one guy you got to look at is Marshall McLuhan. And Felker was, you can look him up. He's a famous journalist, editor, became a professor at Columbia. So he got Tom Wolfe to go out to San Francisco. Once I told Clay Felker that Howard Gossage had got interested in McLuhan.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who turned, now this is the interesting synchrony, guess who turned Gossage onto McLuhan? Gerd Stern.
Oh, cool.
Gerd Stern was a... You know, he was married to a rich woman, so he knew high society people in San Francisco. So he was talking to Gossage at one party. He told him about McLuhan. Gossage was the famous ad guy, and so he looked into it.
Hmm.
So, and then you come full circle, and I'm interviewing Gerd when we find out about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm the only guy who brings it out of Gerd. So Gerd turned Gossage on to McLuhan. So then I told, I didn't know Gerd, and I told Clay Felker that this ad guy out in San Francisco was interested in McLuhan. So then Felker sent Tom Wolfe to the first meetings.
Mm.
Ted Carpenter were at those meetings, and you can read about them in the appendix to Don Thiel's book, The Virtual Marshall McLuhan, where Carpenter's very upset at the media manipulation he saw that Gossage was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. He didn't like McLuhan being promoted.
Oh.
Like that. He just thought it ruined McLuhan. It's a whole essay at the back
really?
Of the book on it.
Did McLuhan fall into a...
No, Carpenter just didn't understand McLuhan.
Oh. So McLuhan utilized that opportunity to its fullest potential and...
Yeah, he did. He knew it would be all fucked up and distorted, but he accomplished what he wanted to get. He wanted to get more access to people and media so he could put his stuff out.
Yeah.
He didn't care about the editors or the writers. It's the people in the world, in the audience, that read the thing and then maybe heard about his book and went and read the book and they got something out of it.
Right. where the fuck does McLuhan come from?
What'd you say?
I says, where the fuck does McLuhan come from? I mean, one of the things that, now that Ion's adding more details, I can imagine a more colorful answer. But initially, Ion, you know, he was saying that we all just jump in from non-physicals. It's like we're all tabula rasas, and we get what we get, you know. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't explain where a fucking McLuhan would come from.
Well, it does come from when... McLuhan is totally understandable when you understand the stuff he studied, Wyndham Lewis and that. Because a lot of McLuhan...
Yeah, where does a soul like that come from? It's not a matter of souls of a non-physical just jumping into the physical and getting what they get. I mean, you know, you got the guy who... You got so many people that die at childbirth.
His mother did it to him. His mother was a pretty incredible woman. And she was, you know the story? Have you read his biography?
No.
Oh, well, his mother was what was called an elocutionist. What's they called? The Ruth Draper of Canada. So in the 30s, this Ruth Draper, it would be a woman to go around and put on one-woman shows and recite poetry and plays and act out literary archetypes. You know what I mean? Perform, called elocutionist. Well, McLuhan grew up with this woman rehearsing all this stuff in her home all day. So he could recite all kinds of poetry. Now, it was like his radio.
Yeah.
You know, the kid absorbs pop radio. Well, his radio was his mother rehearsing for her, doing all this culture for her performances. And she would go on the road. And she had separated from her husband. And and then what's McLuhan's thesis about? Rhetoric and elocution, for fuck's sake. It's about his mother, made into a historical landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the, you know, chemical body levels. And then, as McLuhan said, he was lucky. So, you know, there's some other things from Ion.
Like, for instance, when Piaget talked about the fact that the nervous system is already beginning to develop responses to phonemes while the child is still in vitro, so that it's prepared when it enters into the language speaking world to start assembling the language that it's going to be indoctrinated into. Mm-hmm. How come some people's nervous systems remain so flexible that they can absorb all these different languages and think multi-tongues and across, you know, and make so many, and not just be confined to, you know, what most people, I think, by the time my language circuits were formed, they're pretty solid. I really didn't want to learn another language. It seemed like a ridiculous thing to do. I couldn't figure out why I should want to do it, and it seemed like an impossible thing to do anyway, because I speak English. And yet some persons, like Marshall or I guess Joyce, something about their... They never fixated on, you know, on a particular language modality. They remain somehow open to being able to juggle all language. Now, that's special. That might we call it a spiritual gift. But see, now there's an added addition. I mean, people are born tabula rasas, but they're born with spiritual gifts. And why are some people, you know, there's a distribution of these gifts. They're not everybody has the same spiritual gift. There's some, it seems like there's some order to a pattern that comes into the life that then becomes expressed as alive, as opposed to no pattern coming in from non-physical and then embedded in physical. The pattern making just occurs based on what womb you came out of and what family you were born into.
No, it does. Look at Mozart. His father was a great pianist, so I mean, he grew up with it. That got him going. I don't know how much the soul brings in. That's something that has to be developed with Ion.
Yeah. Well,
Ion,
now
the soul doesn't care where it's born. And just loves to be here and to mix it up.
Well, it doesn't. I mean, you know, I can attest to the fact that I don't always love being here. And yet...
No, that's later.
That's later, after, yeah.
You know, a kid... Ion says that children are totally tapped into Source. They know a lot more than people realize, you know, they perceive, or I don't know. It's like their non-physical is really working. And then gradually it gets beat up or changed or distorted or numbed or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot more to do on that. If you ever have a session next, go start with that question.
Right. Well, now, also, you must have been curious about this at some point, since you've summoned McLuhan and you've summoned Zappa and these people. Did you ever inquire, you know, and then you have this conversation with them based on their specialty and their knowledge and your knowledge and acquiring new knowledge or new insight. But nevertheless, if these people are hanging around, if they're summonsable by you, what the fuck are they doing when they're not talking to you? Do they? Is Frank still creating music in another parallel world? Is he? What does he do with himself? I mean, he would be bored to death if all he could do was sit and ponder his life as Frank Zappa, the human being, and have absolutely no integral interplay, interaction, creative power wherever he is now, except to talk to you.
Well, that actually, don't go on. I got to end soon, but that becomes a theme in the second Death Stone Cold, or the third Stone Cold. It's really funny when I'm told about that.
Okay. That's on my list of things that probably get in the next several weeks, yeah.
So what was the monster part of Wednesday? Just the fact that I could go into any topic and just keep going? Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm growing. My perception of him is growing, and I believe that you're integrating better with the radio meme now, so he's coming through more powerful, and I've melted some of my resistance to him, so as he's coming through more powerful, I think I'm experiencing him more powerful.
Yeah, but why is he coming through more powerful? What is the power?
Well, I think it's the evolution of you. I think when you first got on the radio with him, you didn't know what the fuck to do, really. I mean, you just did whatever you do with him when you're not on the radio and hope that that would work. I think you're finding you're finding a format that's gonna, where the radio will amplify you and you can amplify the radio. I think you're finding your feet.
Well, that's good, and I think Carolyn really helps.
Yeah.
Have that Carolyn there is back.
I mean, I loved her question at the beginning. She said, you know, Ion, don't most people, like, when they talk to you or they want to talk to the other side, they want answers to personal
marriage, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I, you know, and then of course people call in and ask those kinds of questions, but you know, and Ion's clear that we're not here to answer those questions for you. You're a creator, and you can. We want you to realize that you're empowered to solve these things for yourself. That's the best way.
Yes. Here's two responses. Same person after the November 4th show. I think this Lindsay is probably a female. I'm not sure. Yesterday's show, you know, with Ion, yesterday's show was incredible. So exciting to listen to Ion articulating truths I have known all along without knowing it, capital letters, knowing, in brackets, without knowing it, in brackets, with my little physical brain. If you know what I'm saying, it is also wonderful, the process of being. We know, we forget, we know, we forget a game, then we know a game. It can be crazy-making, but fun, too. Combined with the Tuesday show that James had done the day before, I don't know what it was, but combined with that, there is a lot of information there that can help so many people if they can only open their hearts and minds. Bless you for making it available on the airwaves. So that was her response after November 4th. So then on November 18th, she says, she sent an email to James and he forwarded it, your shows with Ion are hilarious. I love their perspective. And I like that. The person understands it's a plural. Most people think it's a he. I love their perspective, and I feel my own shifting, moment to moment. Sometimes I feel like I would love to call in or write in a question, but what's funny is I don't have any questions. I listen and feel my head nodding up and down the whole hour, like I know everything already, which I do, but Ion's words break through the filter of my human brain. Those two full hours this week, I felt so light afterwards. Thank you.
Well, that's great. That's terrific getting testimonials like that.
Right, and Glow wrote, she's talking about the parents.
Yeah, what does Glow think? She's fucking been channeling all this stuff, and now she's got to confront who?
Yeah. Well, she showed up at Ion at Five Body and started doing the thing again.
Uh-huh.
We wondered if she'd feel ignored or something, because she hasn't done this in years, but she suddenly did. So she takes questions and does her thing, but she does graphics now, because she's a very good computer person, so she doesn't describe the charades that Zappa and them do. She just shows the images that they create.
Uh-huh.
So anyways, in reference to the Curtis Occult Radio one, she goes, love the show, lots of goodies in it. Really enjoy Ion. He really nails a lot of points. Great stuff. So she's very enthusiastic.
Yeah.
So I replied to her, yes, as Ion says, quote, they were going full out on all cylinders.
Yeah, I know, because he used that analogy. You're like an eight-cylinder car running on two cylinders, and all you need is to adjust the fuel just a little bit, fire up the whole fucking machine.
Yeah, it's good. He could come up with a metaphor real fast.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's good that you can dig them, because that's all we're providing a Dobbs on right now, so it's good to like it.
Yeah.
No, actually, we aren't. We're providing Ben. If you want Bob, it's like, you want Bob dealing with the British? Go to Bob and Ben. You want Bob with an obedient rock critic? Go to Bob and Scott. You know what I mean? It's different Bobs. You want Bob just being a handler for the UFO? Go to Cashflow, you know?
Right.
You got a whole range of stuff, possibilities here.
That's right. And one size fits all.
So, it's interesting. If I hadn't have been here, none of this would have happened the last 20 years.
I know.
You wouldn't have known nothing about anything.
Well, yeah, I know. Was, you know, there's some things that are hard for me to imagine. Like, it's difficult for me to imagine my life, as it were, say, without the Beatles. I mean,
right.
I can't imagine that this was all really that big of an accident. It's like the Beatles happened and they made this huge impression. No, they had to have happened. How could my life have happened and the Beatles not happen? How could my life have happened and Bob not happen? It doesn't add up.
Yeah, there's no life. You wouldn't have had a life.
Yeah, I might not have made the stupid decision to come here in the first place.
Yeah. I'm just here waiting for Ion to show up. We had to go through a lot of early Dobbstown permutations before we got there.
Right.
But we're here now, and he's a monster.
Yeah.
He's just a monster magnet.
Oh, hey, okay, we'll wrap this up with one last from the Scott Woods thing. You were talking about Rolling Stone magazine. Now, I wasn't into reading stuff, you know. I mean, I wanted to just listen, dig the music, you know. And
yeah.
So it's interesting to me that there are people out there who were actually, you know, reading, you know, they're into culture more than, yeah, you know, more than I was, which I commend them for. I should be doing everything. It's stupid that I wasn't reading Rolling Stone. But it seemed like Rolling Stone had a life when rock and roll was happening. Now you're talking with Scott about the fact that you can't even be a rock critic because there's not enough going on in rock and roll to make it worth talking, writing about. And so how does Rolling Stone, what is it surviving on?
Oh, it by the 80s it went into fashion. It's not a music magazine anymore. It covers a little bit of music, but it covers everything.
Oh, okay.
Hunter Thompson was created by Rolling Stone.
Oh, I see, yeah.
You know, that's almost 40 years ago. No, they nurture writers. It's political stuff, and they have famous writers write for them. It's a, I don't know what you call it. It's a trendy thing.
Yeah.
A trendy magazine. It's not not counterculture enthusiasm anymore. I mean, Jen Wenner fucking divorced his wife and teamed up with this, you know, very pretty gay guy. He went gay.
Oh, no.
He freaked out living in New York all those years.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, all right then.
Yeah, just take a look at it. It's they write about everything.
Mm.
I never read it, but they do it. They have a patina of music stuff, cover a bit of it, but they cover so much other stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess it's like a Time magazine, but longer articles or more hip writing.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Okay, so there we are. We're all up to speed. Everybody's happy. We covered everything.
That's right. And more next week. Looking forward to continuing this series with Scott. Scott's asking the best questions.
Yeah.
He's asking them from a perspective I've never heard anybody ask questions from, and he's bringing out really good Bob material.
Yeah, and have you heard the latest Bob and Ben?
Yeah.
Okay, because he was pretty excited about the last show.
Yeah, it was really good.
We're now, if you look at the little thing he writes, he added an extra sentence saying, well, we finally, after 28 shows, came to agree that Finney's Wake is a masterpiece, the key to revolution, and we're going forward with the revolution.
He writes that as an what do you call that when you appendix something on to the end?
An addendum.
Yeah, is that his addendum to the show?
Yeah, well, every show has the same. You look on Bob and Ben, you've been there, right?
Right.
It says, we discussed the phrases.
Right.
Carmuster.
Wow.
And now he says, we'll just look at it. He says, and we finally came to an agreement that Finney's Wake was the revolutionary masterpiece, and we're going to forward with the revolution.
Oh, like this is scary, Bob, because if people like him get it, then does that end the conversation? I don't want the conversation to end, so I don't want him to actually get it, because, you know, it's fun to hear him.
We pretend we're running a revolution. We make a big impossible task for ourselves, so we keep talking.
Oh, yeah. Well, great.
We never get it. It's always, what is it? We never get it done, but it's always enough.
Well, he's going to have to apologize to Marx when he dies for jumping allegiance and switching over to Joyce.
We'll make it easy. We'll pretend that Marx was always relevant, you know. We'll just keep Ben, you know. Make it, as Ion would say, we'll soften it for Ben.
Yeah. Well, you know, hearing you talk to Ben and hearing you talk to Scott,
well, it's getting awesome now.
Well, the thing that I said initially, you know, which you and Ben responded to, you know, music is obsolete, Bob and Ben is the best. Well, I still can't describe what I mean by that, but I'm getting closer, because as I hear you talk about Finnegan's Wake, rock and roll in print, the way that you talk about it, you're rock and roll in, what do you call speech, you know?
Yeah, I'm Finnegan's Wake in speech.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, rock and roll in speech, right.
Yeah. You know, I get the same punch out of the consideration, the thoughts and considerations and conclusions that you're arriving at with these two guys. I get the same thrill that I used to get from rock and roll, which doesn't give me much of a thrill at all anymore. I just enjoy listening to Frank because he was so multi-spansive.
Yeah, and he keeps he goes, he's better than rock, so he's still there. He's worth hearing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good way to say it. This is better than rock, Bob. I get the same oomph.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. That's a good compliment. But yeah, I think that this Scott Woods is a great complimentary operation to the Bob and Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's complimentary, and it fills in what I can't get to say with Ben, because we got to listen to Ben go through his autobiography.
I know, and the sad thing is Ben will probably never listen to Scott. And I was surprised to find out tonight that Scott hasn't been listening to all the Bens.
He hasn't had time. You know, he's a kid and that. I mean,
well, you're pushing me into that category, because I have a certain amount of time to listen to my iPod. I completely, coast to coast is off my radar. I have a hard time keeping up with your output anymore, Bob. I used to listen to, you know, you'd put something out, I'd listen to it a couple of times. It was usually on the second time through that stuff would start, you know, fixing in my mind. Now I'm having to stream a consciousness my way through this stuff just to get to the next one.
And you're saying that you don't do coast to coast anymore?
No, and I don't really have the affordability to re-listen to stuff to listen to stuff twice, which I like to do. But
yeah,
your output is just getting pretty.
Well, with Ion supplementing, it's just over the top now.
Yeah, I mean 2 hours a week of cash flow, and then I'm glad that I'm not glad, but now it looks like Scott's Woods is scaling back to 1 hour, which is more reasonable because you were doing two, and then
Ben's an hour, so
Ben's an hour,
4 hours a week,
four solid hours, and then you throw in, you know, like the Curtis thing and the Eben thing.
Yeah, I think we're Eben this week.
Oh my God, Bob.
Yeah, well, let's hope you get pissed off at one of them so you so you cut back.
Yeah.
Just get sick of one of them.
Fuck your stupid show.
Yeah, okay, so that reminds me, I got to phone Eben and see if, I think she's got to listen to the cult radio show, I think, to get fucking prepared. She doesn't know any of this. She doesn't know what's happening, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so that's great. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye, Bob.
Okay, Scott, bye.